Yes, there was a comment about some birds that are able to mimic sounds. And there's a number of species that are wonderful mimics. They can take a sound of another bird and almost duplicate it perfectly. So those kind of singers are some of our finest singers in the bird world, those mimics. Interesting. I should mention, though, I shouldn't leave the impression that dolphins are classical music snobs, because they also responded to reggae music of Bob Marley and the Wailers, but not as much as Mozart. So. Yeah, they were filming them, and I was there to study the dolphins for sure, but also to, I'm open to the possibility of having an interaction with species, and I feel like I mentioned earlier that music transcends boundaries. Well, I feel like music can transcend the boundary between species, so I'm open to that possibility, and it happens. It happens on very simple levels. For instance, I was mentioning to another person, I had a chickadee come to our house, and it has the typical Beethoven's fifth song. And so I would sing the song back. And all of a sudden, the bird was starting to throw variations at me. So it'd go, so I'd throw back that variation, and I went through 8 variations with that bird. So those kind of things are around us if we're open to it. And I still have, I feel like I'm just scratching the surface of it, but that's kind of the direction that I'm exploring. One thing I didn't mention that maybe I should, there's been, music has always been an inspiration for composers of many genres, musical styles, but there's a real movement now that I'm really excited about, because there are some composers that are using terms like an ecology of music, and instead of writing music like Debussy, La Mer, so writing what would be a descriptive approximation of what the sea would sound like, they're actually approaching writing music from a perspective of, like John Luther Adams, become ocean. So they're more interested in trying to get a sense of the rhythm of the ocean and how it slowly fluctuates and changes over time. There's composers that are using songs of birds within their music, like the Radivara piece I played at intermission, where they're either using the actual bird songs, or they're using the bird songs and then stretching out the sounds and making them sound different. And so there's a really exciting movement now that's trying to incorporate biodiversity into their music. And I think it's really healthy. I'm looking forward to hearing what develops over time. I'm sure. Oh, pure play. Yeah, well, I certainly think that, yes, I think in some cases it is. I think with the example of the wood thrush, it could have achieved its purpose of a couple variations, but instead it chose to maximize variations and contrast. And so I sense, from my perspective, I mean, it's only my personal opinion, yeah, it's kind of gotten above that survival of the fittest perspective into things like beauty and play and, you know, appreciating the soundscape that it's contributing to. And
so it could integrate dance into that picture?
Yeah, I've seen it in terms of some of the lek behavior of birds. Like there's a tropical bird called the South American tropical bird, Central American tropical bird called the manakin, that has a lek area where basically the males are going to dance in front of the females. And it's, you know, it's not like human dance, but it's going and buzzing and flapping their wings. And so yeah, there is a dance element that's expressed by some animals. And I think that that last picture, let's see, of the common dolphins here, the spotted dolphins. I mean, to me, that's dance. That's dolphin dance. And they chose to interweave together before they spread out. To me, that's a choreographed move. Absolutely. That's choreography to the supreme. 15 humpback whales within that small space feeding. Yeah, I think there's a real, I think there's a real opportunity to look at different scales through the arts as it applies to science. And yeah, dance is one of the arts to look through that lens. A little bit, the question was, do I know about the naval sonar and how it affects animals? There has been a big concern specific to sonar effects on beaked whales. And because there's been a correlation that's been made between beak whales stranding on the beach during times when they had sonar activity in the area. So that's led to a lot of effort to work with the Navy. And most recently, they made an attempt to define areas off limit on the Pacific coast during certain times of the year so it wouldn't impact cetaceans, whales and dolphins in particular. It is a concern because the perception is that the sonar basically scrambles the hearing and directional finding of specific whales. And beaked whales are one of our deepest divers too. They're, along with the sperm whales, among our deepest divers, so they're more sensitive to it. Yes, had a chance to join a marine photographer, Pat, my wife and I were down in Tonga, and he was photographing humpback whales. And I went down to do some sound exploration and to be with the humpback whales. It was a completely different experience from spinner dolphins were, because when I was with the spinner dolphins, I could play the music from the bow of the boat and they could hear because they were doing their spin jumps all the time. With the humpback whales, they only surface every 20 minutes and more. And so it became a lot harder to work with sounds above water. So I tried to play sounds into the water. I had an underwater boombox that was supposed to be waterproof, and I had it within waterproof bags, but still it wasn't totally effective. But I'd go in the water and you'd have anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes with the whales if they were comfortable with you being there. And so when you're in the water, I'd put on the sounds. I had a signature flute whistle that I tried to play every time I was with them. It was a Carlos Nakai, the Navajo flute player, and the piece was called Shaman's Call. And I thought it was really welcoming and very pure and a very lovely melody. So I'd play that, and some of the times, I mean, they're used to motor noise. That's the only context they get from humans. So when I play the sounds underwater, often the male escort would just come right below me and start to surface closer to it, where it was down below me, maybe 15 feet. And other times the calves would be down deeper with the mother, and they would also kind of angle towards me and come up closer to the surface where I was. So yeah, they were responding to the music from my perspective and the perspective of other people that were kind of watching what I was doing. It's a lot harder to do with humpback whales just because you're in the water and boy, the chop was high where we were, and sometimes your time with them was limited and my equipment would screw up. But yeah, they're ready. If we get the equipment figured out, I think there's a lot of opportunity for interacting. My understanding, as limited as it is, I feel like I'm just scratching the surface, is that, you know, the landscape built up over time. And you have to have, you're limited by your body size and your lung capacity for starters, and the type of, you can't make the sound of a blue whale, you can't make the sound of a bat. So we're limited in what we can sing, how we can sing, just like birds are. So there's a limitation on the flexibility that they have, but within that flexibility, they're gonna try and maximize the strength of their signal so that they can accomplish their objective, whether it's defining a territory or trying to attract a mate or just being part of that interactive soundscape. It is changing, and they're finding it in urban areas that some of the birds are starting to increase in frequency a little bit. In some other cases, they're going lower. The animals are adjusting somewhat, but even so, I mean, I try and seek out and record environments without motorized sounds. In an urban area, it's impossible. In a rural area, it's really challenging. And I practically have to go to wilderness areas and try and record in the early morning before the planes come out from airports. And we're kind of lucky here in our section in that we get some aircraft activity from the naval bases, but a lot of the times all the flight paths from airplanes are like Seattle to Spokane, they're kind of mid-state, and we have kind of like an opportunity of sound recording. So it's hard, and animals are adjusted and adjusting, and their sounds are getting masked, and it's a big concern, because I hope I've been able to show how finely attuned biodiversity is to the sounds that they interact with. It's a part of their environment for survival. They either hear to find food or avoid becoming food through sound. So we're masking a lot of the sounds now with our technology. You know, with humpbacks, I mean, I had this plan that, okay, I'm gonna have a lot of opportunity to play a lot of different songs, and I'll have a lot of opportunities to be with humpbacks, and I'll have a signature sound that if I play long enough, they may associate with me, and perhaps if I came back to the same area next year, maybe they'll incorporate it into a song. I might have all kinds of hypotheses about what could happen, but the reality was with the humpback whales is that it was really hard to do what I was trying to do with the equipment that I had. And the only thing I could do was project sounds. I wasn't able to record at the same time I was playing music, so I couldn't really kind of triangulate with the sounds that were coming back. And a lot of the times I was playing to a mother and calf, and they were quiet. It's the males that are doing the call. So I think it's possible, but I still have to work on some strategies to make it perhaps more possible to see if it works. Yeah, for sure. And it's like with spinner dolphins, we could try and mimic a signature whistle sound that may have been dominant with the group from the bow and project it onto the water through like a flute or penny whistle, or but just can't do that underwater. I know I've been kind of talking with my wife about that. Can we get a penny whistle and put a rubber tube on that flares out at the end and stick it in the water? And then, you know, still working on it. Yes, yeah, the spinner dolphins are wonderful. We had tow lines from the bow of the boat that we tied. We made leg loops, and basically we would hang on with one hand and have our foot in a leg loop, and we would be underwater with the spinners. It's a great experience.
They're very friendly to you, aren't they?
They are. They just kind of gather around you, and I mean, they're on the move, so you move at their speed. And if they don't like you, they just go deeper and off in a different direction. So we counted on being able to develop a relationship. I think with all animals, it's developing a relationship, just like whether it's a dog or a cat or a spinner dolphin, they have to trust you. So building that trust, if you have the time to develop that, is really critical. Thank you.